organization of Hudson Owens and Benefit Agents.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the organizers for the invitation to speak. And so my plan for today is to say something about localization, and then time permits about affine and developing algebras. So most of the things I will say will be classical for some people, but maybe not so classical for others. So I have no idea. Okay, so what is localization? What do I mean by localization? Something very general. X be a topological space. Suppose we have a sheaf of rings A. X rings with one, not necessarily commutative. And then we take the algebra of global sections, capital A. In this generality, we have we can go backward and forwards between sheaves of A modules, curly A modules, and modules for the ring of global sections as an injunction. Sheaves of A modules on X and simply A modules. So this way we just take global sections, and this way we take an A module tensor by the sheaf A with global sections. That's just a pre-sheaf, sheafify, that gives you a sheaf of curly A modules. So it's abstract nonsense, but very useful abstract nonsense. So in certain situations, it happens that this is actually an equivalence. Well, it's not true. I need to throw in extra hypotheses on the kind of sheaves I'm playing with. So there are many choices. Let's just choose to work with coherent sheaves of A modules and coherent A modules. And most of my rings will be Noetherian, so coherent means finitely generated. Okay, so, it's not even clear that this injunction restricts, because the sheaf curly A might not be coherent, and global sections of a coherent module might not be coherent, so you need to have some assumptions to make sure that this is this injunction restricts. And so, just for convenience of language, something we made up, following Bernstein and Badinson, we say that X is coherently affine the injunction does restrict. That basically means that curly A has to be coherent. And the global section functor is an equivalence of abelian categories. Okay, so this is a good situation, because it means that the localization, so the idea is you have an A module and you think of it geometrically by sending it over across to a curly A module on X. If you have an equivalence categories, that's great. Right, so maybe it's not clear what you win from this. Let me just, for motivation's sake, probably doesn't need any motivation at all. Hope the idea is that sections of this sheaf curly A on smaller opens might be easier to understand as rings than global sections ring A. A might be a really complicated ring, but local sections might be easier. So in the commutative case, you have as you get smaller and smaller, you get to a local ring. Local rings are good. Okay, so hopefully A U is easier than whatever that means. A for small u And, well, then you can get new invariants, geometric invariants from of the category of A modules, which is what you might be interested in, from representation theory or maybe other things. You can get new invariants such as support. You take a module, localize it, and take the support of the module. I mean, this generality, if you've got a ring map from B to A for some ring B, you can just push your B module, pull it back geometrically from B modules to A modules and then back to sheaves, but that's stupid. You want to have some nice conditions. So coherently A are fine. All right, so examples, such a notion. Well, obviously the classical one from algebraic geometry. Suppose R is a commutative Hilbert ring. And then we'll make a space X out of it, spectrum. We'll make a sheaf out of it, a structure sheaf. And then, well, there's the vanishing theorem, or classical algebraic geometry, X is coherent. OX. Okay, that's the motivation. Any localization in the classical sense of algebraic geometry. I'm just trying to explain what I mean by localization. So it turns out that there are interesting examples of topological spaces X and sheaves of non-commutative rings on X which have this property. So here's maybe the first example, historically speaking. I will present it in a generality which will be suitable enough for my application later on in the talk. Suppose so R, as in example one, suppose we have a smooth affine scheme finite type over R, and then we'll make the sheaf D. D modules, differential operators. D, so technical name is sheaf of crystalline differential operators. What does that mean? So I'll tell you what its sections are over a small U, again of the same type. So all you do is you take the algebra generated by functions and vector fields. Precisely, vector field is a geometric name for the algebraic notion derivation. So derivations of the functions take the free algebra on this set. That's a bit too big, so make it a bit smaller by imposing some natural relations, namely that inside the differential operator ring there should be the relation of bracketing where the derivation of the function should be the action of the function, of the derivation on the function. And furthermore, if you take two vector fields, two derivations, you can take their Lie bracket inside vector fields, or you can take their Lie bracket inside here, they should be the same. So it's some construction. Of course, there's a classical notion of differential operators due to Grothendieck, which is a different construction. This one is called crystalline. I gave a very simple definition, which is only valid in the case when X is smooth. The idea is that there are no divided powers in the derivatives. If you take the classical notion of differential operators, and you take some interesting R, maybe in characteristic P, or maybe mixed characteristic, you will get divided powers. D, 1 dx to the p. We don't want them for this theory. Just take plain vanilla all functions in vector fields. It's like no divided power. Okay, so the theorem is that in this situation, x actually is, well, coherent the D, fine. You can localize D modules to modules over D of X to sheaves of D modules in X, and that's an abelian equivalence. Note that I assume that X is affine. It's not so surprising. Our affine scheme is okay. You just localize means invert. So the content in this statement is that if you have an element, a function you invert, then you can differentiate the fraction A over F. That's what this means. Okay. So let me give you an example of one of these algebras. It's nothing to be scared of. Take affine n space, functions are polynomial algebra, and d of x in this case becomes polynomial algebra, and then you have n commuting derivations, which I denote partial 1 to partial n. So it's like a skew polynomial ring. Only relations are, so all variables commute. Except, so it is a non-commutative ring, del I xj, xi equals 1. Okay, so this is a standard relation you should expect from a derivative. Okay, so this is what's known in algebra a wire algebra. Okay. And algebra over R. People study this ring usually with complex coefficients, and there's a whole theory of D modules built in terms of this ring. Right. So, wood time. So, the third example of a coherently affine space, so a geometric situation where you do get a nice equivalence of abelian categories, I think was first discovered by Badenson and Bernstein. Let me just write something down first. So suppose R is a field of characteristic zero, no interest to maybe this conference. Let's take X to be projective space. Okay, so this is a projective variety, it's not affine. Okay, so certainly it's not coherently OX affine. However, theorem Badenson and Bernstein, 1981, it is D affine. So here it is D affine. So something very interesting about the slag variety or the partial slag variety. Projective space, you can think of it as GLM mod some maximal parabolic. So it has this nice property that D modules behave very well. So you can localize modules for the ring of global sections of D on such a space X, and you can think of them locally in terms of modules over sections of D, which are easier rings. That's the point I'm trying to make. This algebra is pretty easy, very close to being commutative. Many variables, but only few non-commutative relations. That's the point of this kind of localization. So, I wanted to now state the general theorem of Bernstein, which works for flag varieties, and then I'll move on to affinoid things. So what they've done is they have created for each flag variety a whole bunch of sheaves, with respect to which the flank variety is affine, coherently affine. So these are so-called sheaves of twisted differential operators. So what I want to do is I want to walk through that construction. Do my choice. Flag variety. G will be semi-simple. You can do most of these things in the reductive setting, but I will choose to be semi-simple, simply connected. Split algebraic group over R. I'm still sticking in the general setting. R is anything nice. B some Borel, N increasing radical, T I'm going to be the abstract Cartan group, B mod N, so I'm not picking a splitting yet, I'm just taking that thing, and correspondingly algebras G, B, N, T. The algebra. So all I'm doing is I'm taking a classical group, or maybe one of the exceptional types, and base changing it to R. Okay, so it's still pretty general. So in this setting, I have X, G mod B, plant variety, and I have a bigger space I want to play with. This is where the twist will come. Now, I'm not sure what the accepted name for it is. G mod N. Some people call base affine space, not affine. It's only quasi-affine. Okay, so base or basic. So you have the obvious projection map. I'm going to call it psi. X tilde to X, so it's a vibration of some kind, and the magic word that is a risky, locally trivial T torsor. So it's not quite a product of X with T, but almost. Locally in the risky topology, it's a product. It's very nice. Now you have an action. G cross C, not Heck algebra, torus, abstract opus, act on X tilde by G C dot X N is G X T N. So it's a commuting action of G and T on the same space. And it works because B normalizes N. So it's a nice construction of a space for G module Sliven with a big action of endomorphisms by T. Okay. Well, whenever I have an action, it's actually, a nice algebraic action. I can differentiate it algebraically and get an action of the Lie algebras. Differentiate. I get action phi j from G cross T to where? Well, elements of the group act by automorphisms, elements of the algebra act by derivation, so vector fields on X tilde. And I can upgrade this to the inverse Lagrangian algebra, ring homomorphism U, so I still call it phi tensor J basically, U of G plus T plus 2 potential operators on X tilde, and then a wonderful thing happens is the image of this action commutes with the action of T, because T is abelian. So that means I can say that actually lives inside the T invariance, except that's not quite precise. I'm going to push it down to the flag variety first and then take T invariance. Okay, so, and this sheaf is, I'm going to call D tilde. Okay, so, this is the source of twisted differential operators. So I'm going to give you an example in just a moment. But first, I'm going to just write down what this thing looks like locally. So it's something a bit abstract. It looks like it could be differential operators, but it's not, because it's this T thing and C thing involved. So what is it? So this lemma tells you what it looks like. If U is some open affine, and it trivializes the torsor, so that there is some isomorphism like that, then you can just compute, using the definition, D tilde of U, the sections of this D tilde, isomorphic to honest differential operators on U, tensor differential operators on T, but I'm taking T invariants, and T invariant differential operators is one definition of enveloping algebra. So I get U of T. Okay. That's what it looks like, so it's not too bad. It's a real algebra tensor, a commutative polynomial ring. Two, I have this map J, so that's the infinitesimal action of T on X tilde. And the claim is that J of U of T is a constant central subsheaf of D tilde. So this isomorphism certainly depends on the choice of trivialization of this space. So as you vary U, you'll get different trivializations, different isomorphisms. It turns out that this part is somehow invariant. You get a nice center of D tilde inside that. Okay, time for an example. Let's go to GL2, SL2. G is SL2, then X, as everyone knows, is P1. X tilde is just the, well, cone of a P1. So you have punctured plane minus a point, plane minus a point, collapsing onto a circle. That's the picture I have in mind, approximation to algebraic geometry. So I want to just write down what these maps phi and j were in this example, just to give you a feeling of what this construction is doing. Maybe a bit abstract here. So to do that, I'm going to do it locally on P1, so I'm going to pick some open space U, so big cell essentially. Some local coordinate Z. And this is just line cross-punctured line. So I've got an extra variable U. Well, it's inverse, and so I can compute by the lemma what D tilde looks like locally. Simply functions, and then I get, well, I need to have the differentiation by Z, del Z, and then what is J of T in this case, J U of T. So it's not going to be the generator of the algebra, it's going to be the Euler operator UW. So JU of TT is a generator for the Lie algebra of T. Okay, and you can compute. I've done this computation a million times, but each time I do it, I have to redo it from scratch because the normalization is involved. It's annoying. How do you differentiate? Many choices. So here's the formula I've come up with yesterday. Where do the basis vectors of the Lie algebra G go? That's the interesting thing. Well, as we know, G is FL2 of the Lie algebra, so people in this conference call the basis root H, U plus, and U minus. I will call it H, E, and F. And I'll tell you what phi is doing to these things. So it has to be a bunch of vector fields, or differential operators on, well, here, really. So some element of this ring. Here's what it is. Minus del z, 2z del z, minus u del u, and finally, z squared del z, minus z u del u. Okay. So you can do this also on the line around infinity, so where z inverse is the local coordinate. You get similar formulas, so these two flip, this one gets changed by a sign, and this one gets to a different variable, v del v, but that one's constant. Okay, so t goes to a constant thing. This is, I'm not quoting this from the book, you can actually sit down and do the computation, work it out. This is what's going on, so you get a map from the inversely melting algebra of FL2 to this Lie algebra. This is at the heart, if you think through theoretically, of the construction of Bernstein and Bernstein. Right, so let me do some more. I'm going to define precisely what a sheaf of twisted differential operators is. It's going to be a central reduction of D tilde. But first I have to do some groundwork. Let I be some splitting. Of the natural map from B to T. Of course, T is the Lie algebra of B mod N, so it's just B mod N, Gothic. Right. H to be the image of T. And then we get, so this is an honest Cartan subalgebra of G. Note that I'm still working over R, anything, any base ring. It all works in that generality. So let N dot some H dot some N bar be A triangular decomposition of G. So of course N is the N I had before, and the only new piece of notation is N bar. What can I do with this decomposition? I can decompose the inversely melting algebra into a tensor product. I can write everything, you know. So this is F, this is H, and this is E. I can write everything as a polynomial in F, H, and E. And then I can pick out the central part. So every monomial in F, H, and E either starts with an F or ends in an E, or it doesn't start with an F or end with an E, which means it must be a polynomial in H. It's trivial. Okay, so, and let phi be the projection along this decomposition. So Then we have the subring of G invariants. So the group G acts on the enveloping algebra by conjugation, essentially. And this is an algebraic action. So I can take the invariant subring. This is always central, but in positive characteristic, when R is a field of characteristic P, it's not the whole center. All right, so this guy is called the Harris-Chandran. Okay. Why is that interesting? Well, you have the following theorem. Which tells you what the relations are inside U of G cross T when you go to D tilde. There are some relations. I think it was first done by Gelfand and Kirillov. In the case when R was the complex numbers, I'm going to write down some generalization of this. Let R be a domain, probably true for any R, but I haven't had time to sit down and verify that it works for any R. Then you have a nice commutative diagram. So make invariants and go to the melting algebra, then do phi. So that lands inside D tilde. If you want to be precise, global section of D tilde, but in fact there are any local sections, it's fine. Compatibly. Or you can do the Harris-Chandran thing, phi. And I want to go to T, not H. So I'm going to do I inverse phi. And then I can do J. And the theorem is that this commutes. So the proof is you analyze the action of U of G and U of T on the universal volume module, but I thought it might be fun to do this computation for SL2. Any objections? Good. Maybe I need that. Right. So, example. Suppose I can write down the Casimir, which means that suppose half is an R or something. Therefore, you can compute the invariance in SL2, so still G is SL2. Invariants are generated by the Casimir element, which appeared in Dospinescu's talk, where C is half EF plus FE plus half H squared. That one's easy to remember the form in that way. I want to hit it with the Harris-Chandran map, which means I have to rewrite it with F to the left. There's only one term out of order here, EF, so let's push the F through to the left and get 2FE plus half H squared plus H, simply because EF is FE plus H. Right, so clearly, phi says kill anything not central when you write it properly. So phi C is half H squared plus H. Number comes up all the time in representation theory of SL2. It's an action. Right. So that was easy. I'm going to abuse notation that redefine JU to be, sorry, T to be the image of H in here. So I'm going to identify H with a generator of the abstract Cartan, and I'm going to let it act. I'm going to call that T again. And as we've seen before, we compute what this is, it's just Euler operator U del U. Okay. And then, so I want to work out what happens in this diagram if I start off with C here, go this way and go that way. So we've just done this way, right? We'll get basically this with t. The interesting thing is what the formulas that the board is currently obscuring do to c. So here's one of them earlier. I've just substituted those formulas into C. Okay. So it's clearly a term with degree 4 here, and term with degree 4 here, and some quadratic things. Let's focus on the big terms first. So I get minus 2 del z squared del plus 2 z del z del plus 2 z del. These are the only terms which don't involve t, I think. Plus 2 del z t minus 2 z del t plus half t squared minus t. I've got a minus t from the formula here, not plus. Okay. Then these terms here, I pull out a z del on the right and 2 on the left, and I get minus del z plus z del plus 1 z del. This one here is just 2t, right? Because del z minus z del is 1. Plus 2t plus half t squared minus t. And that one's just 0. Again, del z minus z del is 1. And so I get half t squared plus t, as promised. Right. Okay, so that's, I wanted to give you a feeling for what's going on in this diagram, which computes essentially the global sections of d tilde. See the formulas here. Okay, so now let's get to the definitions. Any character lambda, know that I'm still working over any base ring R. Define the sheaf of twisted, or lambda twisted, I suppose, depending on the parameter lambda, differential operators on X, on the flag variety. By what do we do? Well, we have this universal sheaf d tilde, and it has a constant central subring j of u of t. So these are Euler operators, and I'm going to just set them to be lambda. So this means the u of t module r determined by the character lambda. Okay, do this, get a pre-sheaf sheaf of R. Sheaf of algebras. Okay. So, now I'm going to state the main theorem of Abelson-Bernstein. So the classical theorem works in the following setting. Let R be a field of characteristic zero. So, classical Lie theoretic terminology, rho, half sum of positive roots we say that mu in T star is dominant, so there have been many versions of dominant in the talks in this conference. I'm going to give you yet another one. I can't remember what it is. It's some generalization where the theorem works. So dominant means the following: mu of h is not a strictly negative integer for any co-root h. Okay, so There really is no choice here. Somehow, the action of the Borel on the Lie algebra of G by conjugation is independent of a choice of Borel. It gives you a prescribed direction inside space of all weights. And so I haven't really made any choices. Just dominant means that. Okay? And final definition. Mu is regular if the Weyl group, which acts on T star, doesn't have any elements which fix mu. So the Weyl orbit on mu is chi mod W. So here's the main theorem of Valence and Bernstein. First of all, okay, so what have we done? We've got the slack variety, and we've got some family of sheaves of differential operators on the slack variety parameterized by T star, D lambda. Well, what are the global sections? Okay, so the first theorem uses the diagram I've just rubbed off. You can compute the global sections as a particular quotient of U of G cross T. Okay, precisely. You simply take the invariance, you go into U of T via the Harris-Chandra map, and then apply lambda. This is true for any lambda. So I'm just setting these Euler operators to be lambda of them, and then see what. That gives me basically lambda squared plus lambda, half lambda squared plus lambda, and I take C minus half lambda squared plus lambda. And what I add by that central element of U of G, that's the central quotient of U of G. And second theorem, I'm not supposed to write here, right? Well, this is a nice localization, and as you have guessed, because I've written down these definitions, it's not always, unfortunately, a nice localization, only in the case when lambda is rho dominant and rho regular. So if lambda plus rho is dominant and regular, then x is coherent d lambda. So in fact, you get a whole family of sheaves potential operators with respect to which the flag variety appears to be affine. You can do localizations really well, any one of these sheaves. And of course, when the ground ring is complex numbers, it's some kind of, it's more than just a cone inside T star. If you just restrict it to regular weights lambda, so integral weights coming from the algebraic group, it would essentially be the dominant regular weight. But you can do this in non-regular weights as well. Okay, right. So I have 15 minutes left, so maybe I should say something about what I've done, which is not very much. But this is a picture to keep in mind. You get a lovely family of localization. You can have a module for, of course, what's the point? A module over the Melkin algebra with that central character localizes well onto the flag variety. Right. So all I've done is I said, you have this picture, I can put hats on everywhere. And most of it works. And prove some theorems in non-commutative algebra about U of G hat. Affine and Melkin algebra. So these are going to be L-Banach non-commutative rings. That's the right terminology, I think. So most of us has worked with my friend Simon Wadsley. Notation, the restrict R to be a complete discrete graduation ring. Maximal ideal pi. Residue field little k. Field of fractions big k. Definition. Pose G is an R Lie algebra. Free of finite rank. G, and so then it's Apinod and Melton algebra. I'm not going to have time to write down those words again. Apinod and Melton algebra, U, G, K hat, means what you do to get a Tate algebra if you start off with a polynomial ring over R. Everyone knows what a Tate algebra is, right? So you do the same thing with, in this non-commutative case. Complete biadically the integral polynomial ring over R, but biadically works in any setting, and that's fine. Examples. No divided powers, exactly. Well, they're there somewhere down the bottom, but I don't want to isolate them. I want to keep it crystalline. The divided power is on the dual side. Wrong ball. Examples. So, as I said, G abelian, you get a Tate algebra. N variables, hence the name. More interesting example, SL2R. You can take U SL2R. You can take the commutative Tate algebra on the letters F, H, and E. And this has a non-commutative structure with the standard relations. HE minus EH is 2E, etc. Okay. Looks like a Tate algebra, but non-commutative. And the point I'm making is that this is a non-complicated ring, relatively speaking. Completed group rings are way more complicated. Just look at their generators and the relations, exponentials. This is linear. Bit scary, maybe, but still totally under control. That's the point. And now this theorem is going to make it even easier. Turn them into D modules. So G B X as before over R. Define D lambda K hat to be what I had before. But put hats everywhere. Of course, you have to do this in the language of sheaves. So this is a quotient sheaf, a sheafify, but all works fine. And lambda is in T star. Okay, so that's a, what is this thing? It's a sheaf. It's a sheaf of rings on what? On X. What was X? X was the flag variety defined over R. Okay, so it's a scheme, and I'm completing it, so it's whenever I have sections which are K-algebras, this completion is going to die, so it's only supported on the special fiber of the flag variety. So, and then it extends to the formal neighborhood of a special fiber if you want, but I choose not to talk about that because I don't see any point. It's an algebra construction. Okay, so it's a sheaf on the flag variety supported only on the special fiber of these Apinod type objects. Okay. And of course, it's not new really. remarks. If I take the trivial parameters lambda equals 0, I should have said, of course, that when lambda is 0, I get the honest differential operators on the flag variety. So d0 hat is just Berthelot's sheaf of arithmetic differential operators. His notation is as follows, approximately different cursive d, level 0, no divided powers, completed on the formal scheme invert p. Okay. But of course I can do this for any twist, and actually in our paper we do the formations of these, which makes it a bit, little bit, a tiny epsilon bit more complicated, but not really. You get the same theory. Okay, so one thing. Second remark is that if D inside X, so it was like the affine 9 inside P1, if V trivializes Xi, let's say V is a big cell, as in Gegele's talk, what do we get? What are the sections of a string? Well, because V is assumed to be trivializing the torso, that means we can get rid of the lambda locally. That makes it 0. And then I have one of those crystalline differential operator rings over R. So it's a Divine algebra, complete. Okay. So I get d lambda k hat of V. Looks like a Tate algebra, but it isn't. It's a Tate-Val algebra. The relations are as before. All brackets are 0 except delta I xi minus xi delta I is 1. So I call this thing, depending on my mood, a Tate-Val algebra, or maybe an Athenoid Val algebra. The same K-Banach algebra, but non-commutative. Okay, and of course, relations are much easier than in here, still. So here's our theorem. Theorem 1. So for technical reasons, I have to restrict the prime p of the residue characteristic. A very good prime for the algebraic group G. Don't ask me what this means, I can never remember. Roughly means not 2 or 3 and not 5 at C8, maybe. Sorry, Peter. And if SLN, P doesn't divide N. So a weak restriction on P. Okay? Then let U be an enveloping algebra completed. Let Z be the same thing done to the invariants of algebra. Okay. Completed, and let lambda, as before, some element of T star, T is defined over R. And then the theorem is, I can put hats everywhere. Sorry. U enter Z K lambda. Okay, so I take the center, which is in this case a Casimir operator, I can mod out by some character that center, and I get this central quotient. And the second theorem is exactly as before. It's central, so this is the central quotient of U. And again, exactly as before. This guy, or the flag variety, becomes coherently affine for the sheaf, again, if lambda is rho regular and rho dominant. Two. Lambda plus rho is regular and dominant then flag variety is coherently D K lambda at affine. So you have an equivalence of abelian categories between modules over this algebra U with that central character and sheaves on this formal special fiber. And I really should say that this theorem is really due to Mu Tui, who did this in the special case when lambda was a trivial character. So this particular part of the theorem is. I mean, it's the same proof, but you have to do something. It's not too difficult. This, however, she did not write down. Just did that. I think she was interested in Berthelot's higher order things. So if you're interested in those things, I don't know what happens to them. If you allow divided powers of some fixed level, I don't know what the global sections are. They're still known to be by Newt, whose result could be coherently affine. But I don't have any use for them yet. So I have, how much time do I have? 5 minutes. I have some time to write down some theorems. Second theorem, so this is a good thing. Why was this a good thing classically? Well, you might be coming from representation theory of real or complex reductive groups, and you might have an irreducible representation, and you might want to, well, ask, what is it? So you do some work, you turn it to take locally analytic vectors maybe or something, you get a module for the enveloping algebra, and if you're lucky it's still simple, make some simple module for the enveloping algebra classically. Theorem, it has a central character. So this theorem is true in this setting as well. Every simple U module is, well, life would be very easy if it, I just said, has a simple character, unfortunately only potentially I have to make a finite base change. So Z local finite. It's one way of putting it, or has a simple character after a base change. So this theorem was originally proved by Daniel Quillen. It's not just Shor's lemma, you have to do some microlocal analysis to prove it. And then, in this case, you have to do some more microlocal analysis to prove it. Okay? So that's good, because if I have a simple U module, then after a base change, I get a module for one of these rings, and then I can pull it back to the flag variety, localize it, and think about it geometrically, which essentially means I can go to the affinoid Tate Van algebras, which are simpler, easier rings. I can do something with them, and I can prove results about my module there. And that's the strategy. And, well, if lambda is not regular, you can always actually find a rotated lambda which is dominant. That's good enough for half of the BB theorem. So, some technical work. Okay, so I don't have much time left, so maybe I'll just write down the implication of this theorem for co-admissible modules over k-points of reductive groups, or in my world, modules over the orthogonal algebra. Again, assume P is very good for groups between G, let G be an open compact subgroup of G of K, and suppose D of M is zero, so I didn't have time to define this, I'm sorry, it appeared in Matt Emmonson's talk, dimensional support, non-commutative support for the Eagles-Farrow algebra, and this means that M is not a finite dimensional k-vector space. So suppose M, D of M is bigger than zero, or M a finitely generated KG module. Okay, so this is a completed group ring over R invert P. Okay, then the result is that M must be quite big. There is some number R which comes from Lie theory. It has many interpretations. I'll write down the definition, which is somehow more geometric, It's half the minimal size of a dimension. Of a non-zero coadjuvant orbit for the complex points of the Lie algebra. So the complex points of the Lie algebra, oh sorry, of the group, it's a complex algebra group, it acts on the dual of the Lie algebra, it has some orbits, zero is an orbit, everything else, well, union orbits, and they're very special varieties, which are completely understood, more or less. They are always symplectic, and their dimensions are known. Okay, so in particular, each one of these dimensions is 2 times something. Okay, it's a coadjuvant orbit. And the theorem is that the module must have dimension at least L. Okay, so here's a table of values for R. Now narrowed it down to just three cases. Usually I write out the full table, but today I will just write out three classical groups and ignore the five exceptional groups. And the values are as follows. So this is just one of the theorems, I hope, that allow, well, it's a restriction, of course. It's a restriction on the size of representations that appear in nature, and you need D modules to prove it. Hopefully there are other results on representations of periodic groups that you can obtain in this way. Thank you. You mean for the
compact representations of the over finite field, and somehow can you sort of beef it up to the open compact? I don't know any reason why
you can't do something. Of course, the linguistic theory requires some pressure, right? So first you have to develop the modules properly. Uh-huh. And this particular flavor of D modules is only in its infancy. I didn't say anything about the parameter information of these D hats. And you have to do some work before you can really do that. But
yes.
Something like that.
So basically, it might be related to any sort of